Hey guys, this week's episode is brought to you by Handy Paint Products, a small family-owned company in Minnesota who loves making paint jobs easier with random things, like magnets. More on that later, and you can find Handy Paint Products at Lowe's, Home Depot, or anywhere else you buy paint.
I'm John.
And I'm Sherry.
We like home stuff.
We like talking.
And we like the occasional game show sound effect. So welcome to Young House Love Has a Podcast, where we have deep and not so deep conversations about DIY, design, and life at home.
Today we're sharing an unexpected surprise that's saving us thousands on our beach house, plus our top 5 tips for making a small space feel bigger. And apparently John thinks he's a neighborhood hero now, so there's that.
Hey, Sherry.
Hi, John.
I was thinking the other night, we always greet each other at the start of the podcast, but I'm like,
I know, and I always feel like mine is so stilted, like, hi, John,
hello,
I've
husband.
Never said hello before.
Well, I was like, shouldn't we be saying hi to everyone who's listening?
Oh, hi, everyone.
Hey, folks.
I feel like on the New Year's one, I was like, Happy New Year, everyone, but you said Happy New Year, Sherry, and I said Happy New Year, everyone, and then later I thought it sounded like I snubbed you.
I was insulted. I've been holding a grudge now for weeks.
I'm always like, the first minute of the podcast is the most painful for me because I feel like I'm warming up.
Well, I will give you a moment to warm up. I will start with what's new. We've got a beach house update in a moment, but first, a tale of heroism.
John, on behalf, colon, hero.
On behalf of me. So yesterday, I was bringing the kids home from an errand, and as we pulled into our neighborhood, there was this little dog just walking down the street by itself, wearing a dress.
Just wearing a dress, out in the elements.
But it was cold, it was like a little bit muddy and wet, so I like went into this mode where whenever I see a dog, especially a small dog, I'm like, if that were my dog, if that were Burger loose, what would I want someone to do? Because he doesn't get out much, like he hasn't run away ever, but if he ever were to, I'd be afraid he'd like immediately get squished by a car.
Right, yeah, he wouldn't know what to do.
He's very low profile.
Yes, exactly.
So I pulled the car over, put my flashers on, and went and grabbed this dog who I assumed was going to run away, but actually came right to me. So I picked her up because I didn't want her to get hit by another car, didn't want her to be cold, and put her in the car and drove her home.
Cut to me. I'm at home, and I hear John open the door downstairs and shout up to me. I'm upstairs.
I'm like, put the dog away.
Right, and I'm like, okay, why?
I was like, I have a dog with me.
And I was like, John, because I pictured like a big, muddy. I was like, can't we put the dog in the garage? And then he showed me the dog and I was like, can we keep the dog forever?
Yeah, I would say immediately 3 of the 4 family members in our house wanted to keep said dog. But I was like, I kind of felt bad because we live about a quarter mile from where I picked this dog up. So I was immediately like, oh gosh, what if it was just like a block away from its house and now I've pulled it farther away? So I immediately went into like, want to get this dog home mode. We put it in our bathroom so that we could keep the dog separate.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't running all over our house because it was still kind of muddy. It didn't like being in there. So I was like, I want to solve this problem.
Yeah. It wasn't quickly. Like digging at the door, but you could tell it was anxious. It was like, I think it was part terrier, like wire haired terrier.
Yeah. I think like a
schnauzer.
Jack Russell / some kind of terrier type.
One
thing.
Of those. And it was doing little circles, like, yeah. You know, an anxious behavior.
So in its dress.
In a dress, yeah. So we took a picture and we put it on Facebook because we have some neighborhood group boards and we just said like, whose dog is this? Does anyone know? And then we waited and waited.
Yes, I got it out on the internet.
Yeah, we waited about 5 minutes and I was like, this stuff is not going to happen in a minute. And John's like, I can't keep the dog here knowing that someone might be out like calling on the streets for the dog.
Yeah. So I hopped back in the car and went back to the scene of the pickup.
But he didn't bring the dog. He left the dog here because I think the dog was nervous and jumping around.
Yeah,
our car.
It was too much to juggle it in the car and trying to keep an eye out for someone who looked to be looking for a dog. And I didn't see anyone in the area where I had found the dog, but like several houses down, there was like a couple people loading a rug into the back of a car. And we sort of like made awkward eye contact. So I'm like, well, now I started this thing. I should get out and talk to them. So I got out. I had a picture on my phone. I was like, do you guys know who owns this dog? Like, I found him. I want to get him back to their owner. And the first answer was no. The second answer was, I read your blog. Nice to meet you.
You should have been like, you're holding a rug. This is kismet.
Right. She was like, I painted some of my rooms Edgecombe gray because of you.
So now you're a weird blogger creeper.
Right, exactly. I was like, but the dog, everyone. And so the people loading in the car didn't know, but the woman at the house, I don't know if they were, maybe it was a Craigslist pickup I intercepted. I don't know. But the woman who lived in the house, she was like, oh, try this white house down at the end of the street. They sometimes have their dogs out. So I drove down to this house and sure enough, there were 2 other dogs that were out kind of hanging out in the driveway. They had the garage open. So I think that was sort of their home base. So I was like, okay, this is a good sign maybe. And I go up and ring the doorbell. No answer. But
Here's Detective where Detective John comes onto
Detective
the scene.
Detective / Creeper John notices that there's an Amazon package on the door. So now I know the homeowner's name. So I go back to my car, and on my phone, I look them up on Facebook, and thanks to their loose privacy settings, was able to see a picture of said dog in their photo stream. So I was able to confirm that they own this dog.
And at this point, the three members of the household who wanted to keep the dog were like, fine.
Yes, at this point, not to my knowledge, it had been given a new name.
Yeah, our daughter named it. Everyone was petting the dog. It was very sweet. Burger had not yet met the dog, which would have been the end of the daydream because it wouldn't have worked. Because Burger is like very anti other dogs. Yeah. He likes cats, but not other dogs.
No, he wouldn't be having any dog friends. So I got home, I sent them a Facebook message, and also we have a neighborhood directory. I was able to call them, but they didn't respond to either. And again, my impatience and feeling like I have this dog captive, I continued my Facebook stalking and saw they had connected some of their family members. And I Facebook messaged their college age daughter because I was like, oh, you know, she's in college. She's probably more connected to Facebook. Maybe she's looking at her messenger more frequently than her parents.
Cut to 30 seconds later.
Yep. I get a reply. She said, I'm at the gym. I'm coming home. Thank you very much. So like within 20 minutes, the dog is back in the rightful owner's arms, warm, cared for.
And John has never felt so heroic.
Oh, yeah.
He is preening himself around the house, just saying things like, I'm so glad that we did that.
I was like, I just earned major karma points for whenever Burger gets lost.
Right. I'm glad you picked up the dog, even though when you shouted upstairs to me that you had a dog with you, I was not sure how to feel.
And come on, this morning when our daughter woke up and said she decided she wanted to be a dog rescuer.
Right, like that was going to be her full-time job, rescuing dogs.
And then she goes, well, I guess I've only rescued one, and it was yesterday.
Okay, well, my what's new is a great, wonderful beach house update. So everyone knows there have been lots of less than ideal discoveries at the beach house. And when you buy a house that's 100 years old, you have to go into it knowing that. There's a certain amount of sense of humor and expectation of failure that you need to be resilient to these things. But the amazing thing that has happened is that when you buy fixer-uppers in Cape Charles, there is a program that when you submit your home and they deem it a fixer-upper, they will freeze your taxes on the amount that it is assessed for at the point of purchase. So if you buy a beach house that's so badly falling apart and it gets assessed for, let's just say $100,000, for 10 years, you pay taxes on $100,000 instead of, say, you fix it up and then it gets reassessed for $350,000. 10 years of paying taxes on the much lower amount is super significant of a savings.
Yeah. It's basically a program to incentivize people to buy these fixer-uppers because it's going to be expensive to fix it up. And this is at least one perk to offset some of the costs and encourage people to rehabilitate some of these properties.
Right. And so this is a celebration to something great that happened with us, but I'm also sharing it because I really hope that anyone listening who is thinking about taking on a fixer-upper, pay attention to what incentives the government is offering in your neighborhood. A lot of these cities that are turning over or have areas that need help or homes that are in disrepair, we'll try to incentivize it in some way.
Yeah, this is through the county that we're located in.
Yes. So we told you that we bought the house for $125,000 because it was such a fixer-upper, although homes on either side of it were worth about three times more. So when they sent the assessor out from the town for this program, all I was hoping for was that it appraised for $125,000 or less. And so John and I were out to dinner with friends when my phone buzzed and we got the number and it was appraised for $43,700, which is fantastic.
Yes. I mean, like,
they really thought it was a hole.
Right. It really speaks to their opinion of the place. And I feel like hearing this out loud, it sounds like we got like hosed on the price. Like it was just assessed for $43,000, but we paid $125,000. But if anyone else has bought a house, you know that like a tax assessment by the government, like by the city assessors, is not the same as like the fair market value that a seller can price a home for because they're just different animals. And sometimes they're like, sometimes they are close, but sometimes they're way off. The tax assessment is super high or super low compared to the sale price. So
they don't take all the factors in that a realtor might look at your house and say the proximity to the lake or the beautiful lot or the flat yard or, you know, other things that add value to a seller might not add value to a city assessor who's like much more black and white.
Yeah. So like I feel satisfied with the price we paid for it because when we looked at the comps, like the other fixer-uppers in the area, considering the like location of this one and the condition of this one, I think we got a great deal on it.
Yeah, I just wanted to assess low.
Right.
Like, that was the goal. So to get that email popping up, it was like cheersing at dinner. We were so excited. It didn't feel like we lost anything. It felt like we gained a lot.
Yeah, it was good news, not bad news.
Exactly. The crazy thing about it is anyone who knows our blog and who's listened to us for a while knows I have two favorite numbers. One of them is 43, because in beeper code back in Jersey, you'd text 143, which means I love you, or 43, which means love you. And one of them is 7, because we got married on 7707. So the fact that this appraised for $43,700 is insane to me, because it has all of my favorite numbers in it. It is like a joke from the universe.
No, there is one like hitch to this, is that we have to have the renovation completed within 2 years, or else it is all null.
Right. There's that.
That is the
one. And they have to walk through it and make sure it, I think something like it has to be reassessed for more than double what the first assessment was.
Is that what it is? Okay.
Yes. So like as long as they think in 2 years it's worth $87,000, something like that, we're in the clear. But that was like one good thing in a host of, oh, whoops, the rest of the siding is failing. You have to reside the whole house. And oh, did we mention part of it's falling off? You have to redo the foundation and rebuild 500 square feet. There's this little glimmer of excitement, and it was not expected. You expect the bad things. This is like finding money in the walls to me. Yeah. I just found a lot of money in the walls.
And this was something we were alerted to from the realtor that we used. So that's a person you could tap in your own town if you're not sure if one might exist and you're looking to do an old home, or obviously call your county or whatever jurisdiction you live in to check, see if they have something like it.
And they're really friendly. Like the woman was so happy we were doing this. She's like, look, we're really excited about this program. We think it's going to really help fix up parts of this town. You know, it's like we're all rooting for the same outcome, which is a nicer house. The neighbors get better resale value. We get the value. It's like an everybody wins situation.
Speaking of winning, I have a game for you. But first, let's do some updates.
Okay, really quick, funny update to episode 28. I don't know if you guys remember, but in the Weird Digging, I was waxing poetic about my favorite pair of jeans.
I'm sure people could not forget it.
I love these jeans. I still love them. I'm wearing them right now. They're the best. But as I was talking, I said something about them being tight at the ankle. And John very sarcastically said, so that squirrels don't run up them. And we got an email from a girl named Susie with sort of a similar story to tell.
Like a real life incident?
Exactly. She writes, hi, John and Sherry. I'm a huge fan of your blog and podcast. And episode 28 made me laugh out loud. It reminded me of fourth grade art class in the school basement. A mouse crawled up one of my classmates' pant legs and he had to go to the nurse. Pretty sure he didn't get rabies. Love your podcast. Thanks for spreading the joy.
Oh, poor fourth grader got it.
I just feel like, how scary would it be to feel something crawling up your leg in a basement at school and all your friends are watching you as you freak out because something's in your pants?
Oh, he probably became like Squirrel Boy.
Thank you, Susie, for sharing. I hope that that didn't scar anyone long term and it's just a funny memory.
Well, I have some updates too, actually, from the following episode, episode 29. We talked about gift exchange themes for my family, and I'm sure people were wondering and losing sleep over what we picked for our theme for this year, for the 2017 Christmas.
And who the brilliant mind was behind it.
People can judge the brilliance once they hear the theme. But Sherry just tossed out kind of, I don't know, were you half joking?
As a joke, I was completely joking.
You were like, what's that smell?
And then we were like, ooh, you could do like scented candles or food that smells good or any sort of like scratch and sniff stickers or scented markers or perfume.
Whoopee cushions, I think, was suggested.
Yeah, we did think of whoopee cushions.
You know, my family saw both directions in which you could play the theme. And we were like, well, we've done things that were around the sense of sight and the sense of hearing. So people were like, well, why not do smell?
Yeah, we've done do you hear what I hear? Why not what's that smell?
Yeah. I think what's that smell is not as elegant as some of the other statements, but... Who says we have to be elegant?
And don't you have an episode 30?
Yes, moving on from episode 29 to episode 30, which is our first one back from the new year where we talked about resolutions. And we had a bunch of callers calling with their house resolutions. And we got an email follow-up from a woman named Megan who had some tips for one of the callers. Someone mentioned trying to conquer Mount Washmore, just get a handle on her laundry. And Megan had some really helpful tips because she said this is something that she struggled with for a long time and found some ways to sort of push through it. So I wanted to share Megan's email. She says, instead of trying to quote unquote tackle the laundry completely, I just started telling myself that I had to do one little thing each day to move along the laundry process. Whether it was pick up clothes off the bathroom floor, put a load in, switch a load, fold a load, put some clean things away. Just one little 2-minute task. Not all the laundry, just one little thing. She said after a while, maybe a month or two, a couple of things happened. First, it got easier and easier to do that one laundry task. And second, slowly but surely, the piles and piles of laundry disappeared. Now, 2 years later, I almost never have more than one load's worth of dirty clothes in my house at any time. She also had a couple practical tips for how she makes the process more efficient for herself. Like she said, she stops sorting colors unless she needs to wash something on really hot for whites. But she just does everything on cold and throws everything in together. She also, her daughter, I guess, has sensitive skin and she uses the Free and Clear detergent. And so she just started using that for the whole family. So again, she doesn't have to separate her kids' stuff, which is what we do. We switch to that when we had kids.
We use it on everything.
She said, I miss the delicious smell of the old heavily scented stuff, but I certainly don't miss feeling like I was buried under dirty laundry.
That's true. Overall scent of the house, good.
Yes. She said a lot of this was inspired by reading a book called The Power of Habit, which I read a couple years ago, which is really helpful in about how we develop these habits. And maybe I've internalized some of that because she points out that my sort of monthly resolutions of just committing to something for a month kind of falls in line with that, which I'd forgotten. So I'll put a link to that book in the show notes also at younghouselove.com/podcast because it's a good read. Look at that. I just threw in a word digging.
In the middle of the episode. Yeah. What will happen next?
That's all my updates. I promise I'm done. Now it's game time. This part of the show is where I quiz Sherry. We like to call it What's Not, because I'm going to give her a category of things in which most things are real, but one is fake, and she has to tell me what's real and what's not. This one is based on an article called 9 Storage Tools Pro Organizers Never Use. I'm going to give you 5 things. 4 are real, 1 is not, and you have to tell me the fake. You ready?
Yes.
These are storage tools pros never use. 1, plastic shoe boxes.
I believe that is something they never use.
Wooden hangers.
Oh, I like wooden hangers. I feel like they'd like those velvet hangers the best, though, because they're thinner and they take up less space. Okay, so I'll accept that as truth as well.
Coat racks.
I'll accept that as truth as well. They'd rather you hang them in a closet because they always look messy on a coat rack.
Beds with drawers or built-in storage underneath.
I feel like that's the plant for now, although it's not like the others, so it seems like a weird thing for you to plant. I wouldn't imagine that they wouldn't like that, unless I've heard in some feng shui you're not supposed to have stuff under your bed because it's bad energy.
Okay.
No, I'm just saying. Okay, that one is at least my questionable one so far.
Number 5, label makers.
Oh, label makers could be the plant.
Label makers is your answer?
Yes.
You are wrong.
Ah, I was so confident about that. Is it under the bed storage?
No.
Oh my gosh, what is it?
It's plastic shoe boxes.
They use them.
It was not on the list of things they never use.
Okay, because I would see them being purists and being like, why would you buy a plastic one? Just use a regular shoebox and put a picture on the outside or label it and you're fine.
Well, I put it in there as the plant because generally they were saying that lots of these things, like they did mention they don't like under bed shoe storage because they said a lot of people will buy those like containers that slide under your bed to put your shoes in. But they said people don't use them because if you are constantly having to pull it out to put your shoes in and out, your shoes just end up at the foot of your bed and you have a mess. Generally, they were saying under your bed is for off-season, infrequently accessed stuff.
Right. Okay. So if your solution to your problem is putting things you use every day under your bed, you're probably not going to keep up with that and it will become annoying and everything will end up in a pile in the chair in the corner or something.
Exactly. You were right on why they say they don't use wooden hangers is because they find them to be bulky and that clothes slip off of them. So they prefer those
thin velvet felt, ones. Yeah. Or felt. Okay.
Felt covered hangers, which, yeah, I don't know if I agree with on that because one reason I like the wood ones is because of their bulk, because they force your clothes to like have a little bit of space. And so you're less likely to like cram a billion clothes in there.
Right. I think we are two people who are on the spectrum of having fewer articles of clothing than most people. And so the amount of breathing room between that and the peaceful sort of spaced out look is great. But maybe if you have a little closet, they think it just like looks more separated to have a thinner hanger.
That's true. But yeah, I also, you thought label makers was the plant.
Yeah.
That the person quoted here said that labels are good. They love labels. But a label maker just means you have another device that you have to store.
Oh, yeah. You can just use your hand in a marker.
Yes, they point out that handwriting is faster and more personal.
Huh.
So I will put a link to this on our show notes at younghouselove.com/podcast. It's from El Decor. And again, there's 9 things on there. There's some others that might be surprises as well.
Okay, so now we're going to bring back one of my favorite segments, which is called Take 5.
Oh, I thought it was going to be Why I Love John.
No, that always hits the cutting room floor.
You're right, exactly. I just keep it for my personal file.
Clap. So take five is where we share five tips on a certain subject that are hopefully helpful to you guys. And a lot of times these subjects are derived from a lot of voicemails we get or questions we get on social media or emails. And this one we get a lot, which is how to make a space or a room or a home feel bigger. So these are five ways to do it. Number one is cohesive floors, cohesive walls. And what I mean by that is if you have a very small place with three little rooms, but the flooring changes between each room, it will look very patchy and broken up and the flow will not be as easy, as open, or as expansive feeling as if you have three rooms that all have the same flooring that flows into each other.
Yes, minimizing transitions.
Exactly. And that's not always something that's easy to do if you're renting or if you're in a small home and you just don't have the money to put into it. But we do get some questions like this, like, hey, should I wait to redo the wood everywhere in my house, or since my living room carpet's driving me crazy in the short term, should I just replace the carpet in there? My thought would be wait and do it all at once. The result you get will be so much nicer and more cohesive, and just everything about it will feel like it's intentional.
Yes. And of course, this is coming from a place where we just had our first floor refinished to be all the same flooring. So we are feeling the like high of doing the harder thing and getting the bigger payoff.
Right. And we, in our first house is where we discovered this. Our first house was pretty small and it had a lot of choppy transitions with different flooring. When we redid wood to meet wood and even chose a finish that was similar, it did have a slight step up, but it was all the same color visually. It made all the difference. And that's when the light bulb kind of went on above my head about, I didn't really think it made that big of a difference.
Right. Well, we even did in our second house because our kitchen, which was kind of central in the house, it had like a gray stick tile on the floor, whereas everything else around it was wood. So when we replaced that floor, we couldn't match the different woods because they were different woods on different doorways. We just chose something at least in the same color.
Right. It was cork and it was like a bridge tone. So it bridged the gap between the lighter hardwoods and the darker hardwoods, and then we had this cork and it wasn't all the same exact color, but the palette was less interrupted and less choppy. Like when we had the big footprint of the gray tiles in the middle, it really felt interruptive.
Yeah. And sort of the walls is the same concept, right?
Exactly. And it's easier to do. You can't always just fix your floor and make them all the same, but your walls you usually have control over. And so the thought process here is you just want to keep the eye moving through the space so that it feels like a larger space. So anytime you change that with something high contrast, say you have three rooms in a row and you want to paint the middle one black for drama, that will accomplish drama, but it won't accomplish this expansive feeling of the eye moving through a space and beyond.
Yeah, it won't make the rooms feel connected and bigger. It will chop them up a little bit.
Exactly. So if you want to go with drama, that is totally cool. But if your goal is just for everything to look airy and have great flow and be very expansive, go with colors that are within the same palette. They don't all have to be tan or all have to be gray. It doesn't all have to match.
Yeah, and it doesn't even have to be neutral or light. Like you could do three dark colors.
Exactly. They just need to be a similar value so that the eye keeps moving instead of stopping at a certain point.
Right. Not going light, dark, light.
Exactly.
Or like red, green, blue.
Exactly.
Purple, yellow. I'm coming up with some great color schemes.
So number two is tall vertical elements that draw the eye up. Examples of this might be floor-length curtains or built-ins that go from the ground to the ceiling. Even something like applying crown molding, which is not necessarily a vertical, but it's something you look up and notice, will draw the eye up and make a room feel more lofty.
Yeah, it's basically like proving to whomever's looking at the room that this room has height.
Right, like you're accenting the verticality. People are noticing it. It's not just your eye stays on one plane and it's the ground level. Yeah. It's creating variety and height. And that's always a good thing, especially in a small space. And you know what? Vertical things like built-ins are also great in a small space because they create more room for you to store things in a very small footprint.
Yeah, because we only have 8-foot ceilings in our house and we choose lots of tall things, floor-to-ceiling things for this reason, because 8-foot ceilings don't always feel big.
Exactly. Number three is mirrors, right? We've all heard that mirrors can reflect your area. They can expand your space, especially big mirrors. Putting a big mirror at the end of a hallway, for example, that reflects light, it makes the hallway look double long. My caveat is never hang a mirror where it reflects something ugly, or you have then cloned the ugly thing and you get to look at it twice.
Right. I mean, obviously, depending on where you stand, you might reflect something different.
Right. If you're walking into a room and you're going to see the mirror from the hallway the same way every time, but the reflection is of a vent or an air conditioner unit or something gross.
Or like the goblin that lives in your house.
Exactly. Don't put the mirror there. Let the
goblin small child live. Who haunts your upstairs.
Right. Sage that room, close the door, and never go back in.
Exactly. Probably doesn't need a mirror. And I also liked your caveat about a big mirror, because I also think sometimes it's like, oh, I'm going to go get those like little sets of round mirrors or something and do like a mirror collage on my wall.
Right. It's really that expansive large mirror that will create an expensive large feel. Number four is think about how you can use fewer items of larger furniture versus many items of smaller furniture. For example, if you're shopping for a sofa and you have a smallish living room and you go to the store and they have a few standard size sofas and then they have the 6-foot sofa that's sort of like a big love seat and they say, great for apartment living or like amazing for a small space, don't default to buying the little sofa if you measure your room and it can fit the larger one.
Right.
I think the mistake we make is we all bring in a bunch of little things for this little space because we think, ooh, a little sofa is great for my little room.
Well, just like we were saying, you take cues from a room when you walk into it. When you see those vertical things, they cue you to think that, wow, this room is tall. And I think if you walk in, you see a bunch of smaller furniture, you think, oh, this must be a small room because this is the furniture can take. But if you walk in, you see normal size furniture that fills the space nicely. It feels like a normal size room. It feels larger than the room might be.
Exactly. And that was like an old tip I've heard time and time again. Back when Nate Burgess was on Oprah, he used to say that he'd do little rooms, but he'd pick one large sectional or one large armoire. And he'd say, I know this sounds wrong. Like, who puts a big armoire in a little room? But if you choose the right materials and it draws the eye up, it's not like big and hulky and dark, but it's maybe a white painted armoire and in it, it hides the big bulky TV. It can actually make the room look a lot bigger. It can hide your storage, which you definitely need a lot of in a small room. So just don't always shop for the little tiny things for your little tiny house or it becomes the house full of little tiny things. Another side tip. You know, I love a sub tip.
What about number five?
We're going to get to number five, okay. But this is like a 4B.
Oh, gosh. Sherry can never do just five things.
My sub tip for number four is that it applies to rugs, too. So don't get the little tiny postage stamp rug. It will stop the eye in a little square in the middle of the room and make the whole room feel little. If you get the wide, expansive rug in your room, maybe it has a foot of space on all sides and all the furniture sits on it, it will feel generously sized, which will then make the room feel generously sized.
I think what happens a lot, because I'm thinking back to when I was in my like small apartments and small dorms and stuff, is that's also when your budget is tighter. And so you feel like, wow, I can get a 3x5 rug because it fits within my budget. And you feel like I've checked something off the list and it was the least expensive option. So like win-win.
Right.
But I think if you actually invest in some larger pieces, yes, they'll be more expensive, but you'll need less in the room.
Right. And if you wait, you'll buy the rug once. I know the 3x5 rug. It's the rug you buy 7 times.
I had to stop Sherry from buying a rug she saw online the other day.
Oh, it was too small. I wanted it so bad.
She wanted it so badly.
It was like, a 4x6 and I wanted it for the beach house in the mudroom. And John was like, we have not even put flooring in the mudroom yet. You cannot buy a rug.
Yes. And I was like, she's like, I can find a place for it here. I was like, we have a 4x6 rug upstairs in the guest room that you think is too small.
I used all the mean face emojis on John, but I didn't buy the rug.
Yeah, this was a text conversation.
Because I'll tell the full truth. John showed me the rug. And then I said, this is very teasy of you. You showed me the rug. And then when I wanted to buy the rug, you said, I don't want to buy the rug.
I realized it was not fair, but I just know you like pretty things. And I saw it online and I said, hey, Sherry would enjoy feasting her eyes on this. Little did I know. This is going to turn me into the bad guy. So I am keeping those all to myself from now on.
Now he doesn't send me texts full of rugs.
Okay, anyways, number five.
Number five is declutter, clean, and pare down on the little tchotchkes all over. And this is obvious, but if you walk into your small room and you look around, I can pretty much guarantee there are things on surfaces that if you just, for experimentation purposes, took them out of the room and put them on the kitchen table and you looked at the room again, the room would feel bigger.
Yeah, and it may look empty at first, but that's kind of, if your goal is bigger, that actually works towards that goal because you're saying, this room, I have the luxury of having empty spaces. Like, it's big enough that it's not all crammed full because I have a tight space.
So to recap, the take five for making your space or your home feel bigger. Number one, cohesive floors, cohesive walls. Number two, anything vertical like curtains, built-ins, or even crown molding that draws the eye up. Number three, big mirrors that reflect things that are pretty and bounce a lot of light around the space. Number four, think about a few large furnishings versus a whole bunch of small ones that look piddly and busy. And number five, declutter, clean, leave space for the eye to rest and for you to feel like you can breathe in the room.
You kept it at five, almost.
Almost.
There was a 4B in there. Well, before we're digging, let's take a quick break. As you guys heard, this week's episode is brought to you by Handy Paint Products, which are all made here in the USA by a family-operated company in Minnesota that's headed up by Mark Bergman.
He's your typical super nice, super friendly Midwesterner, and he loves creating solutions for little painting frustrations.
Yeah, like the magnet they put on their pail so that you can stick your brush to it and keep it from like sinking down into the paint. It's a feature we didn't even notice at first, and apparently we're not the only ones.
Magnets for holding tools have been around for a long time, like on workbenches. You go into a gas station where they work on cars, they all have the strips of magnets. There's people that have used the pail for a while and they've never even realized there was a magnet. We'll be at a trade show and we'll demonstrate the magnet, and we've heard it, I can't tell you how many times, saying, wow, mine doesn't have a magnet.
Yep, it's there, right by the handle.
You can get your hands on Handy Paint products wherever you buy paint. They've got cups, pails, and trays for standard rollers, mini rollers, and even while you're rolling on a ladder.
And you can learn more about Mark's story and find links to all the Handy Paint products by visiting this episode's show notes at younghouselove.com/podcast. Okay, we're digging music in 3, 2, 1.
So this week, I'm digging a book by Erin Lochner. It's called Chasing Slow. And for anyone who doesn't know Erin Lochner, she is an amazing writer and blogger. She has a blog called Design for Mankind. And I honestly did not know what to expect. I thought it would be tips for slowing down, right? Like 10 chapters on...
like a how-to.
Exactly. Like sort of a breakdown of what to pare down, how to answer less email, how to turn off push notifications on your phone. This book is much more like a memoir, and it caught me off guard because it's very beautifully written and I really loved it. And it's very honest. It is not a how-to for being slow. It is more about her explaining her life. Her husband has a brain tumor. She goes into bankruptcy. It's trials and tribulations.
Well, give it all away, Sherry.
I know. Well, it's all on the back, right? This is not okay. A spoiler. All of this is on the back.
You've only read the back.
No, I've read the whole thing. In fact, there is a funny reference to an article that was about us when we stepped back from blogging. The New York Times wrote about it, and she calls out the article when blogging.
Oh yeah, because she was quoted in it. Right?
She was in it. Yes, yeah, so it's very funny. I read every single word, and it has some great tips. One of my favorite examples is at the end. She has 5 methods of decluttering your home, because of course she talks about decluttering, but she speaks about it honestly. So she doesn't say, when I decluttered, my whole life came together and it was perfect. She says, sometimes you spend so much energy decluttering, you're not any slower than when you just let all the stuff pile up. And either way, your brain is busy worrying and things are going on. So it's sort of, it's this interesting flexing where she is fast and she's slow, and she does more and she does less, and she's adding and subtracting. It's a really beautiful story, but the funny thing in the resources at the end, she says 5 methods of decluttering your home. Number 2 is the sick dog method. I once shared this method with my blog readers, all of whom were surprisingly supportive and not at all offended by this slightly aggressive measure. But once when Bernie's her dog, threw up under my bed, I realized how little was worth salvaging down there. The grocery totes, the old college tees, the unused sneakers I diligently ignored. There was a brief running phase in 2009. This is how the method works. Imagine your dog retching on your belongings, and if you wouldn't find them worth salvaging, you might as well do everyone, you, the dog, the old college tea, a favor and donate them now. So that's an example of her funny, very relatable writing, and it feels very vulnerable. And I love that because it was not what I was expecting. And in sort of the same vein, many years ago, I read a book called Hands Free Mama by Rachel Macy Stafford, The Guide to Putting Down the Phone, Burning the To-Do List, and Letting Go of Perfection to Grasp What Really Matters. This is sort of the supplement to Chasing Slow, and that is much more tutorial based.
Gotcha.
So if you're someone listening who says, oh, the memoir of Chasing Slow sounds interesting, but I also want application and a checklist, this book I would definitely recommend. I think reading it and implementing it are 2 different things.
Of course, and always are.
Every day I'm working on these things, and some days I do well and some days I don't. So 2 good reads, Hands Free Mama and Chasing Slow. I'll put links to them in the show notes at younghouselove.com/podcast. What are you digging, John?
Well, this week I'm digging a TV show. If you're like books, words, too much.
Allow me to sit down on my couch.
Let me do something more John speed and just turn on the television. We watched a great show on Netflix recently that I wanted to recommend. People know that I like zombie shows.
Yep.
I previously recommended The Walking Dead, which is not news to anyone as a television show.
It's like when you recommend a Groupon and everyone's like, we know.
Right, exactly. So this is a show on Netflix called Glitch. GLITCH.
It's good, you guys.
I guess it's an Australian show that has maybe been out and aired over there a year or two ago, but it has recently come to Netflix. And the general plot of it is, it will sound like a zombie movie, that it starts with some people coming out of their graves. But unlike zombies who are there to eat brains and such, they are like perfectly healthy, back from the dead, as if nothing happens, no memory of ever having died. And a police officer and a doctor find them. And suddenly it becomes this tale of figuring out who these people are, why they came back to life, and the impacts of them being back in the world. Because one of the people is the wife of the police officer. She had...
You'll get that in the first, like, 20 minutes of the first episode.
She had died just a year or two before coming back. And suddenly he has his dead wife standing in front of him, which sounds like great. And it is great, except...
He moved on, guys.
Yeah, so it makes things very complicated, but it's not handled in like a salacious, like, CW, ABC, Shonda Rhimes show.
Right, which I also would like.
Yes.
The concept sounds so sci-fi, but it's the opposite of sci-fi.
Right.
Like, nobody is wearing, like, Star Trek costumes. There's not Walking Dead makeup and blood, and people aren't decomposing. It's like... A beautiful blonde woman walked out of a grave, wiped the dirt off, and is a beautiful blonde woman.
But it is this nice mix of kind of like sci-fi, but there's also mystery because you kind of uncover a little bit about how these people died and why they might have come back. And then also the sort of the personal relationship drama of these people. So it has a bunch of different layers. The only bummer to it is that it's only 6 episodes long, and season 2 apparently is not coming till the end of 2017. And I am like super impatient because there were cliffhangers galore.
There were, and it was like always twisting. Like at one point I thought I knew why everyone was back, but then you'd find out one thing that you were like, oh no, that doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
And then there's a big ending, but we didn't realize it was the last episode. So we're like, I can't wait to play.
We're like,
push
great binge watching this on to episode 7. Wait.
I was like, no, no, no.
It's really hard to watch a season finale when you don't know it's a season finale.
Right, your brain wasn't ready for it. We're like, this is getting good. Oh, that's the end. Thanks for listening to Young House Love Has a Podcast. We are so grateful to be part of your Monday or any other day that you guys are listening.
And before you put your phone away, would you do us a big favor and leave a quick rating or review on iTunes? You can do them from your desktop too if you prefer, you know, if you're old school. But either way, they just take a few seconds and every little bit helps to keep the podcast going.
And keep sharing what you do while you listen. Like Amy Polly on Instagram, who was listening when her order of our second book arrived at her door. It's like we're trying to surround you, Amy.
And head over to younghouselove.com/podcast for all the bonus photos and info from this episode, including links to all of the books we mentioned today.
And pictures of some of our favorite room expanding tricks in action.
Later.
Bye.
And now.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're digging.
Music.
Here it comes. That's kind of funny, but that's low.
Lots of space.
Room for the eye to rest.
Right, exactly. Making this podcast feel bigger.
One slow sentence at a time.
Exactly. We're going to talk half speed.